State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy joining us for our weekly chat on Techie Talk. Hey, Tacky, how are you this morning?
Hey Joe, good to see you. Happy Tuesday.
Here we are, yeah, a rare Tuesday appearance for a change.
Yeah, we hit the part of the schedule, and I hope everybody's staying warm, especially the fact that we really hit legit frigid temperatures the last several days.
Yes, here we go. Depths of winter. I'm hoping this means it's going to be an early winter and early spring. We'll see.
We'll see. We do live in New England, and anything can still happen. So, but it is a little abnormally cold for this time of year, and I'm aware that this time of year, of course, is that holiday season's upon us. You know, people are really stretched out. We talked about this a lot about the impact of inflation. We talked about oil prices last week, and you know, encourage folks that you know are having home heating assistance issues to contact Quincy Community Action Programs. The federal government did release some money for fuel assistance for heating if you meet certain income guidelines. So if you know someone or you're having some issue regarding paying for home heating oil or other types of heating issues, you know, definitely try to give QCAP a call and see if what's available. And we don't know what the feds are going to do. In the past, we've supplemented the money with state funds if there was a really bad cold spell. If it wasn't that bad, obviously we didn't supplement. But you know, right now it's really a question mark about long-term commitment for the federal government, a very important program at our local level.
Yes, yeah, and as I understand, the shutoff moratorium has been extended to April. Is that right?
It's normally April.
Oh, okay.
So this state, for you guys who aren't aware, we do have a moratorium of shutting off your heating, electric and gas during the winter months in Massachusetts. DPU actually has a lot of flexibility regarding extending the moratorium. It's generally done into the early part of April when it starts to warm up. They've been known to go longer if we have an unusually cold situation into late April. You know, utility companies will try to work with you, believe it or not. Do not ignore them. If you're having some late bills, definitely call them and see if you can work something out, as well as call QCAP to see if we can help you as well. We do prioritize gas heating over gas generation of electricity. This is one of those little things that people don't realize, is that while the state is pretty much using almost no coal or oil, almost, the ICE New England grid has a minuscule amount left as a percentage. It is a natural gas-driven region regarding home heating and electrical generation of the remaining generation facilities. We actually don't have that many power plants in the state left. Many have gone out of function for a combination of age, hard to re refurbish. Others, just like Pilgrim Nuclear, for example, it just aged out, and the cost of putting it back together to be more today's standards was not going to be cost-effective, and the neighbors didn't want it. So, you know, every time you take off in so-called fossil fuel or nuclear power plant, it puts stress on the remainder. And obviously, Massachusetts buys a lot of its power from outside of Massachusetts because of less power plants in the state for a myriad of different reasons. It's not solely one. You know, if there's a cold spell, your gas for heating at home is prioritized over gas for electrical generation.
Right. And the moratorium, as I understand, does not apply to oil. Is that right?
Yeah, because oil is not a form of, not, it's not utility driven. It's
Right.
not run by a gas or electric company. So there's not much you can do there. They can't shut off your electricity. You can't shut off your gas. So they should not be doing it. You know, obviously contact QCAP. They have a lot of experience on these cases.
Right.
But I always remind folks to not ignore your bill. If you feel you're having challenges on payment, you know, call their customer service office. See if you can work out some arrangement. If you're unable to do so, QCAP has a lot of experience in helping customers out on this.
Yeah. I know. How is the governor's review of the line item, for utility bills? I know that was something that was passed not too long ago.
We're actually still not sure yet,
Okay.
because we haven't done anything yet, to be honest with you guys. Obviously, Chair Cusack released a bill from Telecommunications and Energy, which got a lot of negative responses from a number of different groups. The House did not take it up before the close of session last month. I do not know where that is in schedule for next year.
Okay.
Obviously, we'll do something next year, but there was a lot of negative public response to the proposal and specific sections associated with renewable energy portfolio standards in particular, and some concerns about how they decided to form the Mass Save program. So, you know, I did hear from folks about how much they disliked the changes, and I suspect that this input's being provided by everyone is being into consideration now, as the House House Ways and Means actually has the bill. So, in terms of tackling every individual distribution charge, I'm not entirely sure where the administration is on that at this moment, because the vehicle would be this bill that we released from the House. Well, of course, the governor can file another bill or try to
Yep.
put it in another larger piece that she submits. For those who aren't aware, your distribution bill is the small wires that come to your home, not the giant wires that get you the power that goes across the state. This DPU, the state, has jurisdiction regarding regulating the rates on those smaller wires. However, the DPU does not have any regulatory authority over statutory payments, meaning the state mandates certain types of payments that come through your distribution charge. And there is a lot of review going on at the governor's office regarding these distribution rates to try to help bring down your overall cost. While energy does fluctuate, the distribution rate is actually a larger part of your energy bill than actually the energy charge itself for most
Yeah.
days. On a cold day like this, it could flip over where your energy charge is actually higher than distribution.
Right, depending on usage, right? It's supply and demand marketplace.
It is on the energy side, most definitely. So your energy generation side, as well as your natural gas. The city of Quincy is a municipal aggregate state. I mean, state, not state, city, natural aggregation city for electricity. If you do not opt out of it, you are in one of the three categories regarding your electric bill. So your electric bill on the energy side should stay pretty steady.
Right. Yep. Absolutely. It's a very broad topic. I know we've touched on it in the past, and it's changing all the time too.
That's correct. It's not an easy go on trying to sort this out, because a lot of these programs that the state has put on your distribution charge over not just one, two, or three, or four decades. I mean, we're talking a lot of decades here. Whether it be energy efficiency programs or renewable energy credits or helping folks with on cost shift regarding low income assistance programs. There's all kinds of different things that is a part of your electric bill that you may or may not be a beneficiary of. It's something you're not aware of. For example, you do pay for the Attorney General's Office Utilities Division, as well as the DPU, as well as the Department of Energy Resources, DOER, actually is built into your bill system and distribution charge. And we're talking about a few million bucks, against I think like $12 billion worth of rates. I mean, it's minuscule in terms of the size of the rates collected. It's quite enormous. It's a big number. I have not looked at it in a very long time, as you can tell, but it's in the billions. But again, it's trying to figure out some of the other larger ticket items in distribution rate that the governor needs to come out and just say, hey, this is running out of its useful life. We could probably phase this out or take it out altogether or reduce it.
Right. Do you think that the state's, goal of 2050 for greenhouse gas emissions is realistic?
It's getting very troublesome right now because, of course, Donald Trump's administration has really put a moratorium on windmills. We had already committed to purchasing windmill power that was going to be assembled in Fort Wayne, the Bedford area. There were jobs actually tied to this. And the moratorium on windmills doesn't help or delay its construction and delay its actual contribution to the grid in New England. Then we also have the Hydro-Québec issue, where it was delayed for quite a few years by people in Maine who didn't want the transmission line built from Quebec to Massachusetts. We need a second line because the first line doesn't have sufficient capacity. The wires aren't big enough. So that the construction was delayed, and that actually will be paid out of your transmission charge once actually it goes ahead. And obviously solar efficiency here for large scale solar is at tops 35% average on efficiency. And land-based wind, we've pursued this before, and the best land-based wind is in the Berkshires. And the pushback locally was phenomenal. I actually have been to a public meeting, over 14 years ago, 15 years ago, it feels like, when I was on the just a committee member of Telecommunications and Energy, and sat through a long day of people in the Berkshires just saying no. The mountaintops, certain mountaintops in the Berkshires are actually good for land wind. So it's going to be very challenging. Do I think it's going to hit 2050? I think it's going to be hard.
Yeah.
It's going to be very hard because the delays or the transmission line construction of hydro, and the Trump administration basically banning wind from being constructed means that our timelines working with these energy folks is completely thrown off. We worked in the presumption that the permits and everything was going to be green light despite the delays associated with the transmission line. We figured, okay, we're still inside a kind of the zone. So I would say that we're going to have to wait a little bit here to see where we are on timing, and figure out where we're going to be. But it's hard to project out because of the fact that we actually need to have definitiveness regarding the time frame delays. But
Right.
I would say it's going to be much more challenging. But also 2050 is still 25 years away.
True, administrations will change from now till then. That's true.
That's true. But our entire renewable energy projections were based on information that we had at a time when we passed these laws, and with the understanding there were going to probably be some delays associated with construction and things you can't predict, right? And but I mean, the main response to the transmission for Quebec was pretty severe. I mean, they really pushed hard against that construction.
Right. So what is going on in the State House these days, Jackie?
Honestly, not a lot. Like you said last week, former sessions closed. Committee hearings are still going on. The Senate filed their joint Rule 10 requirement on December 3rd. We're trying to sort out what the Senate co-chair did or not do from my side. I'm prepping another vote for the committee this month. I wouldn't think we're going to, but looking at the schedule and trying to decide if I want to extend or continue. Decision was we're going to try to take a vote this month on some three bills, nothing heavy lifting, and prepping for hearings in January right now, as well as getting another vote ready in January too. So, my intention is have the committee staff everything ready to come out of the gate as soon as we go into the new year.
Okay, very good. Can we talk a little bit, just because it's in the local discussion here in Quincy, about the property taxes, and some suggestions were made to the city council about perhaps changing tax policy at the state level to tax larger residential developments as commercial property rather than residential property. I know it's been discussed in the past, but maybe just as a refresher, can or can that not happen? Why do you think it's a good or bad idea?
It comes back to Prop 2.5, right? And unfortunately, a lot of us, including myself, is a little young for remembering Prop 2.5. And most people have this concept. Prop 2.5 is directly tied to Prop 2.5 increase against your property tax, meaning 200%, 2.5% increase against your property tax is the maximum amount, which is not accurate. It's 2.5% of the budget. It actually limits municipal budgets to 2.5% plus what we call new growth, which don't ask me how that works exactly. It's a little bit of a quandary. So they can actually move outside of it. There's new development on the 2.5% levy, then it's redistributed of the budget to your property taxes based on the valuation set on amount per thousand, and then the commercial property pays a higher amount than you do. You for intensive purposes 100%, but the commercial property pays 50% more. Most places is 150% commercial, 100% for you. So they're plus 50%. I know it sounds weird when I say it that way, but it's really just 50% more than what the residentials pay. And the Patriot Ledger article actually had a very good synopsis of this, because one of the challenges communities like Quincy and actually other old mill cities, industrial cities that lost the major industries, that as commercial property changes or goes away completely in exchange for residential property, the size of the commercial share of the property taxes shrink. So when the shipyard went as its heyday, before it closed in the mid 80s, the city, the total commercial property was well over 25%. And now it's gone to,
It's
let's
about
see,
15%,
it's
actually.
about 15% today. Yeah, so it's very significantly low. I think it was 20% about 20 years ago, actually. So it's really gone down. So what does that mean for a residential taxpayer? It means that as commercial property goes vacant or is converted to residential property, that means your residential share of the budget, city budget, goes up because there's less commercial property taxes being paid because there's less commercial property available. So hopefully this logic is very simple. When there's less commercial property and they pay 50% more, if there's less of them, That means the remaining cost is shifted onto the residential property taxes. That's why you're feeling it hard, not just because your property value goes up, because your value goes up, it's a dollar per $1,000. So obviously, even if the let's say they freeze the rate on residential, if your property value goes up, then your property taxes also go up. But it's also based against the entirety of the budget. If they don't increase the budget at all, freeze the budget, because the commercial property is declining, it will still cost shift onto you as a residential customer. So the battle has always been with a lot of old industrial cities, not just unique to Quincy, is to maintain a large enough commercial base to try to keep relief or keep it from being shifted from the residential taxpayers. So why is this issue regarding large commercial properties come up? Well, no surprise. A lot of these old commercial buildings, as you may know, have become residential. I mean, if you're old enough and you've been in the city long enough in terms of remembering where these old industrial buildings were, where they've been refurbished, like the old Schuster building in North Quincy, or completely demolished and have residential go up, which you go down to East and West Howard Street. A lot of that old commercial property near the shipyard has been converted to multi-story residential. The question is, do you shift the create a new shift on commercial apartments, or, well, basic commercial apartments? I mean, you could go after like condo landlord building rentals, but let's just keep it simple, folks. We'll keep it very simple, just commercial apartments, and make them pay a higher tax rate against you. Now, politically, let's be honest, a lot of commercial apartments tend to be transient folks. So they're the weaker of the voter base. But if you make them angry enough, as we know, they'll show up, right? And the feeling is that there's a lot of money being made in residential property, because that's where the construction is, particularly in the city. The census shows those things. And you look at Quincy Center, a lot of commercial buildings are gone. They're replaced by residential buildings with some mixed use in the bottom in some cases. So the idea is that, well, why don't we just pay more in those residential commercial units? Well, the rent is already pretty high. I think we can't argue that. And we can engage in a different conversation with the housing crisis created in 2008 recession, which ripples into today. But those residents and those tenants will actually probably have a rent increase, because a lot of rent increases are also tied to property tax increases.
Right.
So the idea is that as a residential homeowner, or maybe you have a two family or some smaller resident, not big commercial property that you have, and decide to shift more of the cost to a new tax rate, whatever that tax rate may be, to above 100%, basically of what you pay to another entity, it'll change the, it'll add a new bubble category on, 25 commercial, 75 residential. It maybe becomes like 70 residential, 5% commercial real estate, and 25% commercial property. And then that 5% will pick up a whatever people think. I'm not going to pick specific numbers, because this is just an idea, not a solid policy issue yet. But the idea is that, you're going to create more personal burden on those commercial owners, residential commercial owners, which then of course will pass those costs to the tenants.
So would that require a change at the state level, though, if that were to happen?
Yes, change. We've not touched property one half. Last time we did this property one half change was when we went through the 03.com bust, where we allowed real estate, commercial property for some cities and towns, if they chose to do so, to go to 200% for commercial against residential, and then it'll be a temporary 200%, which after some period of time, do actually pay a lower than 150%. I think you get paid like a 125 for a short period of time. It was like a basically a deferment. So we charge you more and we'll charge you less later on. And then you'll go back to the equilibrium of 100 and 150. That was done after the dot-com bust as a kind of a temporary measure to give relief to cities and towns on massive commercial property loss because of that one. Of course, no one foresee the 08 recession, which created a massive residential property loss.
Right. Everybody was underwater in their mortgages, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you may remember in the neighborhoods, there were a lot of homes that were dilapidated because it was foreclosed on and people just walked away.
Yes, right. Yeah, because they owed way more than they were worth at that time. Yeah.
Yep, and even in Quincy, people didn't think it happened here. It actually did. I mean, I remember going by houses, in the district, and seeing, you could tell, you just know this has just been abandoned. And banks don't like abandoned homes because, frankly, they can't do anything with them. They don't want to maintain them. They don't want to pay the property tax. They don't want to pay the utilities. They don't want to do anything with it. It becomes a money sink. And then you also end up selling the property at most likely a loss, because the loan they provided plus interest, far exceeded the foreclosure sale.
So, do you think the formula for state aid reimbursement to cities and towns needs to be looked at again, Techie?
No, it's not going to change. I mean, the reimbursement program from, okay, well, back up, guys. So I've talked about this every budget cycle regarding local aid. Local aid is composed basically of two major components. Actually, three major components is what funds it. One is your state tax dollars, goes directly to cities and towns for unrestricted assistance. The lottery profits after expenses, which the expenses of the lottery is under 2% of the collections. So the profits, which is after prizes and expenses, goes to cities and towns, and that's a fluctuating number, which generally goes up. Until we hit COVID, it was going up, and obviously recovered after COVID. And then you have Chapter 70 school money, so we call that Chapter 70, and that's a formula. And that formula was adjusted at the end of, actually, we did it in 2019. We did a massive formula change on that, which actually helped certain communities on certain income scales to receive some more money. Because the system prior was based on a 1990 scale of communities, which was no longer in date. So no community lost money really on Chapter 70. Everyone got some more money, but it reflects the current economic situation of socioeconomics, more accurately, of the situation of each community to properly reflect the needs of those communities. So I don't want to get to details too deep because there's a lot, it's 351 communities, all of them different. There's demographic changes in all of them. I mean, it's not as simple as people think it is. It's a lot of moving parts. But City of Quincy did well. I mean, I'm trying to remember the exact numbers. I mean, I think they're up $60 million in Chapter 70 money alone since we implemented this change. I have to look at the exact numbers, but it is substantial. I mean, it's like 23%. It was big. The lottery money obviously has been very generous, and we've been, increasing local aid on increments between 2 and 4%, depending on the year. However, we have frozen this before too. In the 03 recession, 03, 04, 05, Mitt Romney actually cut local aid by 10% and froze it. And the legislature also capped lottery assistance back in that time period when, we needed the money because we lost 10% of our revenue. I'll never forget the day in October when we discovered we lost 10% revenue for the fiscal cycle right away, 3 months into a fiscal cycle. The projections was 10% loss, which actually turned out to be very accurate, sadly, at the time. We've frozen lottery money returning to cities and towns. So often you hear, oh, it's always been that way. Well, if you're old enough, it's not always been that way. And this is, institutional knowledge. So, I mean, I don't see us looking to formula changes. The legislature, when times have been good, have been very good on getting money back to the cities and towns. The Chapter 70 formula review was a big project, took 5, 6 years in state house to do, to try to hold people harmless, as well as make sure those in need get more. Quincy was a community that was a beneficiary of that. And it's kind of like we do everything we can to remind folks again, but between 18 and 20% of our state budget goes directly to local aid. This is just those three categories: lottery money, your tax dollars, and your tax dollars in Chapter 7 education, goes to cities and towns.
Any more information about how health insurance might be impacted in here in Massachusetts?
Not entirely clear yet. As you've been hearing the news, perhaps the Obamacare tax credits will be coming to end on January 1st. That's going to have a huge impact on gig workers and small businesses in particular, especially those categories. They're going to feel a lot of pain. These are temporary measures put in a pandemic. Actually, the 08 recession plus there was an extension of the pandemic. It's the Biden tax credits. Let me back up. I got that all wrong. The Biden tax credits expire. That was put in place during the pandemic to put some relief for small business and gig workers in particular, because that's who uses a lot of this ACA care. It's not just strictly individuals. It's a lot of people at work, right? I think that's a more common misconception. So those gas credit ends at the beginning of the year. There's a lot of going to be negative impacts. We're already suffering a lot of sticker shock, as we all live through right now, on prices, and folks using ACA will feel it more. Tax credits end. We're still not clear how Medicaid reform is going to go. I just know that there's going to be a lot of outreach coming out very quickly now on getting everybody to reapply for the Medicaid. I have no idea how MassHealth is going to handle this with the deluge of with a deluge of
Applicants, right?
applications.
It's like I think it's like I saw a number of 300,000 people might be impacted.
Yeah, I have no idea how we're going to handle that much influx in one time. I mean, you guys can imagine what it's like. People under this weird conception that, AI and computers can do everything for you, but there's still a human review of every application to make sure the forms are filled out and information is correctly provided. And that review process takes time. And if you have a lot of them show up in 1 month, you guys can do the quick math on the human being problem on employees. And MassHealth is partially, I believe, was actually partially paid by the federal government for employees. And we don't, and I talked about SNAP already multiple times on how the cost shifting to 75, 25 state cost a higher versus 50-50 with the feds, which then just reduces our end of the budget on a federal program. Again, we're paying for a federal program, not a state program. So honestly, I really do not know how this is going to go. There's no way you can staff up that many people for that big an influx.
Right. I mean, roughly, how many people work, at MassHealth, really?
Well, I mean, on intakes, I mean, I actually don't have the exact number, but
Yeah.
generally in the 50s,
Yeah. To handle 300,000 requests. Yeah.
Yeah, because normally you don't get that many requests. I mean, you
Right.
don't hire 5,000 people when you don't get that many, right?
Right.
And we had a firsthand experience, particularly during the pandemic, where we have 14,000 applications come in 2 weeks. I think it was like one day was like 4,000 applications, and it
Oh,
was,
for unemployment, yeah.
yeah, during COVID. And I don't think it was even 40 people working that week. And everyone was already in this we don't know how to work mode
Right.
because everything was like scary. We could die at any minute, so we didn't even know how we were properly working. So you compound those two issues. I mean, we've seen it, and it's just an absolute nightmare. And of course, mistakes are made when you have that volume, and then it happens. Mistakes are going to make because you have human beings with overloaded work. And I think people like think it's nefarious. No, people make errors when you're looking at volume. And even then, I mean, the pandemic, the staff couldn't, the secretariat couldn't staff up fast enough because, again, pandemic, right? And you have to train these folks. It isn't just give them like, here's a Cliff Notes and hand you a phone. I mean, they had to set up a whole new phone system because pandemic. And
Right.
to try and get to 2,000 employees somehow, but
Well, remote working was a novelty then, and people didn't know how to do it,
yeah, and then you had to get computer access to folks and remote access. People, I you know it was a horrible experience. No one knew what they were doing. So we're going to be in a similar situation without a pandemic, because we actually do not know exactly what the feds are doing, and as soon as they announce, we're going to have to pivot.
Right.
And for better or for worse, I mean, we still are waiting for Medicaid's guidelines on how we're going to handle these application reviews.
Yeah. When does formal sessions resume, Techie, at the State House? Is that not till after the first of the year?
Yeah, technically, we have a I believe it was the first Wednesday after the first Monday of January, we opened the second year session.
Okay. All right.
So there's a formality in the Constitution that every year after the first Monday, after first Wednesday after first Monday, we actually have to declare the legislative bodies are open. It's back when we used to do 1 year sessions, not 2 year sessions for the purpose of bill review. So this is kind of a leftover thing.
Gotcha.
We can we'll pretty much start formal sessions after that.
Okay. Did you anticipate maybe having to have an emergency session for this Medicaid issue?
No, I mean, we could call a session. I mean, there's mechanisms in both branches' rules to call a session between now and January 1st.
Okay.
But the reality is that it's all about staffing.
Yes, right.
And the governor's folks are in charge of trying to handle that.
Gotcha. Okay. It's a lot of unknowns right now, for sure.
Yeah, again, it's when things legislative branches not do hires. That's a as an executive function, right? But we'll see how it plays out. I just, again, it's just the news talks about like these big issues, which is very important. But there's so many aspects that the federal government's engaged in that doesn't make the big news. And we have a lot of unclarity about a lot of where the feds are engaged and not engaged with us. For example, real IDs, they're putting an arm on that. If you don't have a real ID, they're going to charge you a fee, I believe, $45 if you don't have a real ID. And about 50% of the state does not have a real ID, right? We don't know where it's going to be Homeland Security. We don't know how other aspects of public health, right? We don't know exactly how, if grant money is coming back on reimbursements or grants approved for Department of Education. Local agencies, for example, that has CDC grants aren't getting their CDC grants. We don't know how it's going to impact our infrastructure projects because the federal government moratorium on a number of infrastructure projects, has resulted in the fact that it's going to be job loss.
I see.
Construction workers and laborers will not have this next project waiting for them after they finish the current one, which would then have a ripple effect in the economy. And of course, I'm very concerned about small businesses. We talked about last week about the ADP report, which is not a government report. It's the automatic payroll folks, and they do not represent every payroll. But the numbers show that the smaller businesses of under 50 in particular are not hiring or have laid off folks. And the ones that are 10 and 10 employees have definitely laid off folks. And small businesses, your Main Street economy still represents of half the GDP of the state, of the country.
Yeah, so very significant, yeah.
Yeah, it's very significant. So, I mean, this bears some watching. So, you can say all you want about Trump administration regarding about pro-economic development, but the reality is you and I are much more concerned about the businesses on Main Street because they're a much vital part of our local economy.
Right. And we're recording this the day before the Fed meeting, so see what happens there.
Yeah, the Fed meeting should result in a 0.25% reduction in the short-term rate again. Those are the money that people borrow short-term with things like credit cards, but also banks, take a loan from the Federal Reserve. Those are short rates, they're the day rates, moving money back and forth. It doesn't affect the long rates on the bonds, like the 10-year and above. The funny thing is when the T-bills, the short rates go down, the long bonds go up. So the Trump administration is trying to sell it this idea that reducing the federal short-term rate will also reduce long-term rate. But long-term rate is actually subject to open market buying and selling of folks selling bonds and debt to each other. When there's a situation where the short-term government T-bills are not attractive, the other end of the bond scale, long bonds will start to go up.
Okay, so we'll see if there's a so-called Santa Claus rally at the end of the year. Usually the stock market takes a skyrocket highward toward the end of the year, but we'll see.
We'll see. I'm like I said, you guys all know I've been watching the Consumer Index closely, Chicago Survey, as well as the CPI and the PCEs, nature of the committee chair. I do keep an eye on that stuff. Can't predict the future, but gives an idea what people are thinking to, it's delayed by a month, but gives an idea what people were thinking yesterday. And whether or not the market, stock market improves or has a spike in the month, I have no idea. As I always advise every session or every call with you, please talk to your financial advisor. Strongly advise that you do so. It's never too early to start, Roth IRA or, your 401ks or 403bs or 457s, depending on what employment you have. But definitely, get someone that's a professional to walk you through it. And again, some employers actually provide that service through their 403Bs and 401ks and 457. So some employers will provide that service to you through their retirement program. So, end of year is coming up. It gives a good chance for people to reevaluate their finances. Maybe you should give more or give less, depending on your personal situation. But I do strongly advise people get professional help. Don't rely on ChatGPT to tell you how to do it.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Please, yes, get somebody who's has some experience and a good reputation for sure. Yeah.
Especially if your employer offers that service.
For sure. That makes it very convenient. Absolutely. Especially if you're not very financially savvy.
Yeah, it's the savings rate is a big challenge. This country always been a very big challenge. We're one of the lower saving rates in the world, but it means that people put money into commercial economy because we're a commercially driven economy. Our economies depend on your spending to keep the economy moving. I'm not saying you shouldn't save. You definitely should save, but I mean we're back in a situation pre-pandemic where people do not have a $2,000 emergency fund. It's the Treasury, MC, the Fed Reserve Bank keeps track of those numbers on the average of deposits, and they can get some generic data like aggregate data on income. Like you can get a general sense of certain income levels and how much deposits are left. You don't actually have precise information about the individual person, but you can get some
Right.
macro numbers. And not surprising, people making less than a quarter million right now these days are not saving as much.
Right. Yep. Saw figures the other day about the state's unemployment rate, 4.8%, which kind of startled me. I thought it was more of four.
It was pretty steady, actually, 4.8% for a few
Okay.
months. It's unusual because we generally track with the Fed rate, which is about 4.4 now.
Right.
The federal unemployment rate actually has gone up. Applications not been as high, but more people staying longer. The percentages are always a little bit tricky to understand because the new applicants don't necessarily reflect. Well, the new applicants are important. The thing is, you got to look at is who's still on unemployment. The longer you're on
Right.
unemployment, the harder it is to find a job. And the percentage is going to keep ticking up in my mind because, as I talked about earlier, people are either not hiring, they freeze their hiring, or they're laying off and they're not rehiring. Even if they're making some more money, they're not going to rehire because of lack of certainty about what's going on in the future. And the state impact, I wish I could say it was strictly federal government, but it's not. It's also is impacted by tourism, our schools, the ability you and I to go and get dinner. Or go get, anything we want from a store, choosing your local products. It's not, I wish you could say it's just federal, but it's not, because obviously the federal grant suspensions against the local research facilities, the infrastructure projects, they're basically doing a moratorium on. Again, the WMOs are a classic example of that. Those are jobs that are not happening down in Florida, Bedford. So there's a lot of federal components, but also just generally what's going on here in our own economy. And our top five are healthcare, education, and tourism, depending on what year we're talking in. They flip around. Complex machinery, which is things like microchip making and airplane parts. We do actually do some of that high-end manufacturing here. And then produce. We are still a major seafood exporter, but we also have locally grown agriculture goods that we do export. So, those are the big five things that the state does has been consistently those same five. So as you can imagine, we talk about both the visa changes, right? I mean, if you're a family of four and you're now paying an extra, basically $200, basically 100, $200 a head, so an extra $1,000 US to come to the US, that changes your spending pattern in the US.
Right, and that has a ripple effect throughout the economy, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And the same thing regarding higher education, people overseas don't want to come to school. That's a problem. People can't afford to go to school. That affects us too. And obviously, healthcare. Those federal grants are important to that. But also, how much money in the private sector, venture capitalists, as well as education institutionals, as well as private, companies are able to continue to put money into healthcare. And it's not just going to hospital. It's about medical research.
Right. You won't see investing in that if there's no incentive, right?
Yeah, and the state's done everything we can. We've already put twice now $1 billion of bond money into infrastructure development associated with biotech. I mean, there's, we've done tax credits. We've targeted specific areas of public infrastructure to help that industry. But I mean, there's only so much we can do too. I mean, there's we've done everything we can already. We probably could do a little more, but I mean, how much can they? How much, I mean, how much more are being put in? Because we can't replace a $5 billion federal grant, for example.
Right. Yeah. And yeah, actually, Quincy College has benefited from that with their biotech program.
Yeah, I've talked about the fact that we're in a new economy, and on a particular associate's degree, folks who do not feel they're ready or able to go to a four-year college, should look at Quincy College and other community colleges regarding associate programs that you come out basically with a job because there's a high demand and You can talk to those schools, but you can, look up online as well, certain industries that will need associates for that work. I mean, nursing is another one. We're having a nurse shortage right now too. I know pharmacy is not an associate program. It's like a 6-year degree, really, when you think
Oh,
about it.
yes, it's very extensive, yeah.
But there is a pharmacy shortage also in this area.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. So it's something you can pursue. And you don't have to be right out of high school either. It can be a midlife thing as well.
Yeah, people change careers a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a Gen Xer. I mean, I'm kind of unusual, but most of my friends changed at least 4 jobs before they hit 35.
Yep. It's the days of staying at the same company for, 45, 50 years are long gone.
Yeah, that is very true. Again, I'm the exception in many ways because I'm in state government pretty much, actually my entire adult life. So I'm not the standard rule, but all my other friends had no less than 4 job changes before 35.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the way of the world for today, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. Anything going on in the district we should let folks know about, Jackie?
Well, there's some still continuing issue of local tree lightings we talked about last week.
Yes.
Obviously, the city council is very active regarding the tax rate. They had a meeting yesterday and do a formalization of vote next week, is my understanding, and they'll close out their session for the remainder of actually they close the 2-year council session pretty much coming up soon. And obviously, we did the Christmas parade, so some church fairs going on. But as we move closer and closer to Christmas, it's going to be getting a little quieter and quieter, which I'm very happy about, to be honest with you.
I know last week you were upset about the whole street light issue, Furnacebrook Parkway. Any activity on that?
We had a talk on National Grid with Bruce Ayres and John Keenan's offices, and we basically told them straight up, like, look, you guys own the pipe light posts and you own the underground. And we need this resolved. The danger is pretty high, especially on Furnacebrook Parkway. So they came out with some information better identifying the locations where there's outages. And, we need to understand exactly who we need to pursue regarding responsibility to this matter. And this kind of pointing fingers here at stuff as we reach the end of tolerance in the state delegation. So it provides some better data regarding the locations of the problems of the different street lights, whether it's a missing light or a light out because of underground connections. And then, Bruce, John, and I will follow up with DCR again and try to pin down, like, look, what are you guys really doing here? This is crazy. And, are you not transferring over? Now, one of the things we discovered is that there's some degree of reluctance that we thought wasn't there regarding DCR taking over the lights in the underground for nominal money, like for a buck, like one of those nominal transfers. I'm not sure what's going on. And of course, now we have a new DCR commissioner from, I believe, East Hampton. It's concerning because we have changing in commissioners and directors in particular. You've been working with somebody, the other one goes away, the new one has to learn what's going on. It generally will take the executive staff with them because the executive staff worked with the previous director. People don't realize that. When you lose a commissioner or a director, their executive team goes with them.
And there goes the institutional knowledge with them, right?
That's correct, because those
Yeah.
people you're working with, the history of which, so it becomes like whole starting relations over again. It's like
Right.
we talked about earlier, there are the days of even in government of where you're going to be in government, 30 years is long gone. And it was not unusual to have folks not in state government being in, leadership roles of different departments and agencies. Generally, you have folks from internal that move into executive roles, and then they stay in those executive roles because, the lifetime government. Well, that's not the case anymore.
Okay, so it's constantly resetting, resetting, resetting.
This has been going on for a long time. People have this conception that, people stay in government forever. No, it's not the case either in our world. And it's, I don't know, again, people have career choices to make their own decisions, and they absolutely should. But one of the consequences is all of us trying to work together,
Yeah.
constantly building relationships all the time with folks that don't know anything about the place yet, that we have to keep asking while they're trying to learn. And DCR is a very big agency. People don't realize this from the Quabbin all the way to all the way to the parks down in Taunton, whose name I can't think of, all the way to the entire coastline beaches, the parkways, the swimming pools, the ice skating rinks, even the kind of privatized, the student landlord. So, there's a lot. It's a lot of things for a new commissioner to learn in a short period. And it's not just infrastructure, right? There's employee issues, the safety issues. There's community good, bad, depending on what's going on. Community feedback and positive, negative. It helps to deal with a lot of municipalities. I mean, Boston, Quincy, all those little towns and big cities. I mean, it's very engaged at DCR. And even with the old MDC, it was still enormous, even though it was just limited to the greater Boston area. So when Mitt Romney merged the old Department of Environmental Protection, I'm sorry, Department of Environmental Management, DEM, with the MDC, created the DCR, they made a bigger agency, but didn't exactly fund it like a bigger agency, cost savings, guys, and became a real ginormous thing to manage. So again, I'm very understanding, as you can tell. But we're also very frustrated by the fact that they're unable to keep people for long periods of time, to keep consistent leadership regarding ongoing projects or projects that we're trying to get off the ground.
Yeah, well, this issue in particular is what, 2 years now?
Oh, many more than 2 years at this
Oh,
point.
okay.
Streetlight issues have been going for quite some time. It's just been getting progressively worse. One light's one thing, but when you move into the dozens and another one goes out, go, what's going on here? Or a car takes one out. I mean, that's furnishable parkway. I mean, some of those were just taken out by vehicles. They weren't, that's where the missing ones are, right? And it's no fault of, frankly, anybody other than the car accident, right? So, that's kind of where we, sitting there.
You know what we haven't talked about in a long time, and maybe it's a good thing, is the tea.
Yeah, he has been shuttle busing from Quincy Center. I think people have noticed the last several weekends as it continue to do track maintenance. The T is actually, I know it's not, I mean, people want a perfect T, let's be frank about it. It's an essential service. You need it on time. It's got to be there. You need 100% perfection rate. I mean, that's expectation of people. 100% understandable why. It is a T that needs maintenance, and it needs continuous maintenance. Even though the new track's been laid, the new tire's been laid across Braintree, you don't have those 20, 15 mile an hour speed reductions between especially Quincy Center and Braintree. Those they need continuous maintenance, and that's the thing that's gonna probably frustrate some folks as they kind of move to the part where they hopefully have a good maintenance schedule through the whole system. And they are understaffed. I remember the days when people used to call the politician, "I want a T job for my kid for XYZ reasons." Those days are gone. The T is still trying to hire, and it's challenging. People don't want to work for an agency that has a negative reputation, which, understandable. And secondly, a lot of stuff is still done in your hands. People need to lay down tie. And generally, it's younger folks with able bodies. They're able to go out, in the middle of the night to physically put stuff down with help of machinery. The days of having, 10 people lift a tie is gone. You have machines to help you. But you still have to have people actually, look at it, make sure it's aligned correctly, not aligned. Tracks equal derailment. So, I mean, this is a precision job. I think people have this image of these, old days when you just, 20 people go out, 10 carrying a tie, drop a line, drop a rail, pound it in, and walk away. I mean, it's much more precision oriented these days. And it's not uniquely just a rail line. The entire system has been, continuously reviewed and inspected and overhauled. And again, filling a lot of credit, very methodical. System by system. And I do not want the governor to transfer him to Secretary of Transportation because we want, again, consistent leadership, like we talked about the DCR at the MBTA, which, at one point, remember during both during actually during the Baker administration, we went to like three MBTA general managers in like 4 years. And the executive teams move with those general managers.
That's right.
So,
Yeah, it was at virtually at a standstill. Nothing was really happening.
literally nothing was happening because the new person came in, didn't know where anything was. And, generally, the most folks who don't know where things are, it's just kind of freezing your tracks to evaluate again what they want to do. I'd like to keep filling around for another 3 years minimum.
Yeah, well, he's just serving a dual role right now.
Yeah, I'm troubled by that dual role. It's not the first time. It's happened. Rich Davies, this full disclosure, went to BC, hired Rich. and actually in the same class. And he worked at Commuter Rail, went to be MBTA general manager, and they shifted him over to Secretary of Transportation. And then we lost somebody that actually understood the rail system. He worked in rails before he came into the MBTA in a prior life. And then he left after transportation to go to new, I think he went to New York for a bit, but
That sounds right. Yeah.
pursued other opportunities. And actually is now back as CEO of Massport.
Right. Right. Yep. Exactly. Okay.
Yeah, local kid done good. Definitely better
Yeah.
than me.
We are at the end of our hour, Tacky, believe it or
Hey, time flies when you're having fun. So
not.
617-722-2370, 617-722-2370. That's the number. We're in room 42 of the State House. We are staffed. If obviously people are doing vacation time, so be prepared for that too. Like everyone else, we have people who want to see their family for the holidays. So we're trying to, make that work. Obviously, we're a small office. We are at tacky.chan at mahouse.gov, tackey.chan at mahouse.gov. You guys all know I prioritize constituent emails first regarding the UA these days, a lot of it. I have a couple of T ones this week. It's only Tuesday. I mean, already picking up cases. And a couple of housing ones already this week. I mean, constituent stuff has really popped up closing into the holidays. Obviously, we have a State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook and Instagram. We've been noticing we need to keep up with that a little better, so we're working on it. So you can see my comings and goings. We do have MALegislature.gov. Very strongly advise folks to please make an account, MALegislature.gov. You don't actually need me to tell you where the bill is. You can look up the hearings, watch the public hearings, watch the formal sessions, watch the informal sessions. You can, observe everything you want from there. We don't use X anymore. We're off Twitter X. So we, do not follow us on that anymore. We pretty much discontinue that in favor of Instagram. And we have tackychan.org, which is our resource page. So, people use the contact page to reach out, but also you don't need to talk to me directly if you can find a phone number on your own. And if you have a problem reaching folks, obviously give us a call and we'll do our best to try to make those connections for you. And then, did I miss another one? I think we got them all. And then we have obviously QATV at QATV.org. Feel free to drop Joe a line on anything that's burning questions to you. And Joe decides how to provide questioning at the show.
Yes, we'd love to hear from folks. Still waiting.
Yeah, we strongly encourage it. Even is to say Merry Christmas to us, or Happy
Sure, we'll be happy to
Hanukkah,
mention that during the show. Absolutely.
Christmas, Hanukkah, New Year. Kwanzaa, whatever makes you want, or any kind of holiday wishes, we're happy to hear it.
You name it, exactly. Thanks so much, Jackie.
Take care, Joe.